Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. You ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. And I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pools in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 or 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control, and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor, and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries, and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, boy, who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had number shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now, the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what happened is, When God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go over on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it's on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he...
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, "Shoot it!" So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
All right, it's time for another installment of, and some people might not know, we've had a name change for 9 years. We're in our ninth year. December 24th will be year 10. But we have been going by the title, It's My House. However, a month ago, we changed the name of the program to DIY Housing TV. So that's our new name, DIY Housing TV, which stands for Do-It-Yourself Housing Television. Now, today's podcast, we have a special guest. She's been on here before, though. But the title, and we're going to tie her testimony into the title of today's program, which is Affordable Housing Deserts, Housing Poverty, and Mental Health. And we'll break all those down. Tied into what she's talking about a little bit later in the program, but first, matter of fact, before we even go to her, let me explain what a housing or attempt to define what an affordable housing desert is. Okay, you know, a grocery desert is typically a place, it could be in a large city, where there are not that many or no places where you can get fresh food or groceries. It could be in New York City, Chicago, Los Angeles, but it could be in which those cities have millions of people, but it could be areas of that particular town, neighborhoods within it, where they have no place where you can go get fresh groceries, let's say within walking distance. Or even a short drive. All right, that's a food desert, as they call it, a food desert. All right, housing poverty basically is people that might not be able to afford a house or barely to afford a house. Housing poverty, and then of course, if a person can't affordable housing, if they're experiencing housing poverty. Now you don't have to be homeless to experience housing poverty. You could have a roof over your head in Beverly Hills, but if you're struggling to maintain it on a month-to-month basis, you could be experiencing housing poverty. And all those things can affect your mental health. Now, with that said, let's go to our guest for this morning, Viata Robinson. Good morning, Viata.
Good morning, L.A. How are you?
Fine, and thank you for coming on at the last second, because that's when I asked you. But, hey, but I had part of this program, like, figured out Friday, and then I ran across a YouTube video which reminded me of you, and then I had to adjust the program for that. Anyway, so first things first. Now, you're originally from Chicago. Tell us about, let's say, after you graduated college, what was your housing situation? Take us from wherever that was, Chicago or Atlanta, to California, and then Orlando, Florida?
Well, I met my husband in Atlanta. He was in a class for Delta Airlines in Atlanta, but he lived in Chicago. So I went to Atlanta from Chicago to visit friends and see if I could find a job after I graduated from college. And I met him at a party that my ex-roommate was at because she was graduating from Delta. Long story short, my husband went back to Chicago. I went back to Chicago. We got married 2 years later and moved to California. And we bought a townhouse after we lived in an apartment townhouse. Then we bought a bigger house and we sold that and moved
slow down a little bit. How many square feet was the, I guess, your bigger house in California?
Well, the townhouse, I don't remember. It had two levels to it. So we're talking probably over 1,000. It was two bedrooms and two bedrooms, two baths, small kitchen, that. So probably over 1,000, the townhouse. And then we moved to a house with about, I'm going to say 2,000 square feet. My first child was born in the Italian townhouse. My second child was born in the house we moved to in Redwood City.
All right.
So those
and then
were
speed up was, some years later. You moved to Orlando to.
Nine.
Okay. Now you went. Did you go up from 2,000 square feet or below 2,000 square feet when you moved to Florida?
Way up, because our house in Florida, in California, and we got a much bigger house in Florida for that money. So we had a pool. I had a pool, swimming pool, two-car garage, almost 3,000 square feet. It was four bedrooms, two baths, living room, dining room, kitchen, swimming pool, and about three-quarter acres of land. So it was kind of the American dream in Florida, the first house we bought in Florida.
I would say so. All right, so 19, now, Laura, I'm listening.
That was 1989. So fast forward, 2014, my husband and I divorced. So I had to find a place to live. We sold that house, and from the proceeds, I had to find a place to live. So I was looking for something small, but I couldn't find it at first. I ended up in a condo, a 900 square foot condo on my own after my divorce. And when that lease was up, I realized I can't afford this place anymore. So then I found a tiny house for rent. But by the time I called the woman, she had already rented. And I said, well, where did you buy that tiny house? And she directed me to the builder of her tiny house. And he had a house on the lot that was for sale. And when I saw it, I just fell in love with it. 8x20. So it was 160 square feet. And I thought, okay, on wheels. So I bought that and moved out of my condo and moved that tiny house out in the wilderness, really out in the country, basically, in Marion County, Florida, which is a lot of cows and horses. That was the best place to move a tiny house on wheels. Orlando had too many restrictions, and I couldn't find any decent places to park it. So I ended up out in semi-rural area with cows and horses for 5 years. I was in that house.
Okay. Now you owned the house outright, so you didn't have any mortgage or rent payments on the house per se, the tiny house per se. But you did have to pay,
right,
like a monthly ground rent, right?
Yeah, $200.
All right, $200. All right, that's a pretty good deal.
It was actually $250, but I ended up cleaning the owner's house, so he took $50 off my rent.
Okay, got it.
All right. To clean his house.
So you lived there for 5 years. So you went from like 4,000 square feet to 900 square feet to 160
yeah.
square feet.
Right.
So
yeah,
as a matter of fact, I don't think it was 160 square feet. I think it was smaller than that, wasn't it?
No, it was 8 by 20.
All right, 8 by 20. All right, that's 160. All right, so 160 square feet. So big enough for two people, but you basically live by yourself.
No, big enough for one person. It's a crowd when you got two people in 160 square feet. No, that's a crowd.
Well, you did rent it out before you actually lived in it, though, right?
I rented it out to a couple with a child, and they almost ruined the inside. They were only in there for, I'd say, 2 months. Boy, I had to do a lot of cleanup after them. They had a disabled child in there, too, who peed, who ruined the mattress. And so that was a mistake. And after that, I said, no more renters. I got to sell this. So I parked it for a while. When I moved back to Altamont Springs to live with a friend in an ashram, she needed somebody to live with her during COVID in an ashram. So I had a huge space in Altamont Springs with a queen size bed and a big, my own bed, big bathroom, living room, everything, and a swimming pool, all because a friend of mine needed somebody to move into this ashram that had really become empty. Somebody moved out and COVID happened. They weren't doing yoga classes. So I moved in for 2 years, actually, about 2 years, almost 2 years. And so in the meantime,
okay,
my time on wheels was sitting for sale in a lot for sale. And when they sold the ashram where I was living, they sold it to a woman, and I had to move. I finally got a buyer for my tiny house, and I took that money and renovated a shed. Now, my son divorced his wife, and he had two kids, and he bought a house that had an empty shed in the backyard. And the shed was used to store landscaping equipment. Just a totally empty shell.
It was a tool shed. It was a tool shed, in other words. Right.
A huge tool shed, yeah, because it was bigger than my tiny house. So it was 20 by 10. So it's 320 square feet total.
Right.
So it was as big as my tiny house on wheels, but it was empty, totally empty. And so when I had to move from the ashram, I thought, well, where am I going to live? And then I thought it came to me to renovate this shed, because this shed was already insulated. I was looking at the video you sent me, and she's living, I guess that was Australia.
You're talking about Katrina Davis, that story, that video?
Yeah, I think so,
no,
yeah.
She lives in England. She lives in England. That's in England.
Oh, England.
Right.
And she was talking about how cold it gets because it wasn't insulated. This shed was already insulated that I'm living in, that I renovated. It was already insulated in the walls, but not the ceiling. The ceiling was open, all wood beams and all open. So I had to do something with the ceiling, but all the walls were insulated. So that was a blessing, as well as in the process of building a bathroom. I needed some tile to go around the tub, and there was some tile sitting in this shed that had been there for as long as the house was built, because they used the tile in the floors in the big house, and they stored them in this shed. So there were just enough tiles in this shed to put around my bathroom. So
okay,
this was like, and then the other funny thing was while I was at the ashram, and COVID was going on, my ex-husband was living at my son's house because his house caught fire. So during COVID, my son was living, my had his dad living with him. They decided to put a new roof on this shed. And
uh-huh.
I was thinking, why are they doing that? There's not just an empty shed. Why are they putting a new roof on the shed? Both of them, I got pictures of it. They both put a new roof on this shed. So that just told me, when I finally, started renovating this, I thought, wow, this place is really meant for me. All these preparations were done. Insulated wall, new roof. All I had to do was hire a contractor to put in the plumbing because the plumbing wasn't complete. Put in the plumbing, a toilet, kitchen plumbing, bathroom, and then I painted. I had to paint the whole thing on the inside, about 3 coats of paint on these wood walls. And then a guy built a wall for me for the bathroom. So that was all the money that I made from the sale of my tiny house on wheels went into renovating the shed. And the gift came. I had this company put in this kind of styrofoam-like insulation on the ceiling. It's a new green insulation that they put in all over Florida. And I asked them, when they put it in, I hadn't paid them, and I said, I'm not happy with this at all. You got this tape just slapped up on there for the partitions and all that. I said, I'm not happy with this at all. So they never came back to fix it, and they never asked for my money. It's been over a year. I had this insulation put on the ceiling that keeps it warmer in here and cooler in the summer, and I didn't even pay for it. It was $1,000 worth of work and material. But they never came back. They left their ladder. They never called me. They never came back, and they never asked for any money. So I was thinking, okay, a year later they're going to come back and say, oh, you owe us money. But I haven't heard from these people. So every time
interesting.
I'm like grateful, just grateful I paid that on that part of it. It's not the best-looking ceiling, but it functions in a way that the heat in the summer is less and the cold in the winter is less. So anyway, that's the story.
Okay. Well, now people on our Facebook page, which our Facebook page is titled DIY Housing TV. Go to our Facebook page, DIY Housing TV. And then you can see pictures of Viata's current tiny house, and which is what, 320 square feet, and from the outside and inside, the inside looks very comfortable, and I would say it's definitely big enough for two grown people, and maybe two grown people and a small person, but it looks very comfortable, and it looks like it's got a regular size stove, refrigerator, and bathtub, and all that type of stuff. It looks comfortable.
I do not have a stove. No stove. I don't need a stove.
Don't?
I had a hot plate, and it broke. And I realized my son's got that big oven. He's right across the yard. He has a big oven. If I need to, I don't use ovens anyway. I use a Vitamix and a teapot for heat water. Those are my main appliances.
So you basically have what's called a raw kitchen then.
Yeah, I don't need an oven. I do need a stove occasionally when I stir-fry things. But most of the time I'm blending things, I Vitamix, and making tea every morning, so I just needed the heat water every day. And that's my lifestyle.
Right. And like you said, if you need a stove or oven, you can just walk across the yard.
He's got all the, and I don't have, this is the other thing, I don't have an air conditioner. I have a nice ceiling fan, and I have a window fan that blows air in and out the place. And I don't need a lot of I don't like air conditioning anyway. So right now it's raining. It's really cool in here. So that's a blessing. And the windows are open, and the fan's going. And here's the other key. I burn a lot of incense. For people who do decide to live like this, in Florida, you need to watch out for mildew and mold because it gets moist and hot. But I've learned to use certain scents, cinnamon, clove, and pine oil will keep the mildew away and mold, mildew especially. I don't have any problems with that anyway. The wood that's showing in here, I'm sure it was treated for termites because I haven't had any signs of that, or even though I have wood beams showing, no signs of any termite problems or anything because it was all wood. But the guy who built this was very conscious about long-term use of it because he – and who puts insulation in a shed? He's planning something. And my lifestyle is I don't like air conditioning. I took a huge air conditioning unit out of here because it was in the way of me building a kitchen. And I use my ceiling fan during the summer. And I put shades on the windows that face the sun. So in the morning when the sun comes up, those shades are down in the summer so that I don't get a lot of heat in here in the morning. Because the shades are down, and then when the sun is on the other side, I'll raise the shades up, put all my fans are going. It's comfortable in here all summer. I didn't have air conditioning last summer. I'm not buying one this year. One of the reasons is I could not find an air conditioning unit to fit these windows. The windows are small,
right?
And I could not find the air conditioning units to fit these windows, so I had to go with a fan, and works fine for me.
Okay, well, it looks very comfortable.
My son keeps it nice and cold at his house, so if I get uncomfortable, I just walk over to his place and get cooled off, but I don't have to do that too often. And then I don't stay in my house all day. I can go to Publix and cool off. Every place in Florida is freezing. So if you need to cool off, go to a McDonald's or someplace, Starbucks, and sit in there for a while and then come back later in the afternoon and your place is cooled off. That's how I work this.
All right. So you were able to, like, say, convert a tool shed into a tiny house, and people, like, say, if you go on our Facebook page, which is DIY Housing TV on Facebook, then just scroll down the first block of pictures. This is about nine pictures total. You can take a look at the outside and inside of her tiny house, and looks good on the inside as well as outside. But that inside looks very comfortable.
A lot of gifts.
You live here by yourself, but how many people? When you say it's big enough for two people to live in?
No. This is comfortable for one person. Because the problem with two people would be clothing. How do you? Two people can't store their clothing in this. A lot of my clothing is in my grandson's room in my son's house.
Okay.
Half of my clothes is over there, and then I have little cubicle with baskets for my everyday clothing, underwear and shorts and T-shirts and things in here. But like my winter clothing, I had to store at his house. If two people were here, we'd have a problem with storing shoes.
Now, hold on. That depends on two people. That depends on the lifestyle of those two people. So that's very subjective.
Yeah. Yeah, most people have clothing, a lot of clothing that they have to store. And that's the biggest storage challenge is clothing, I think, for most people. That might be wrong, but
yeah, I would say Western people.
Yeah, people have 10, 15 pair of shoes. Some people actually have that many shoes. They'd have to get rid of half those shoes or more than half to live here in a space like this. Otherwise,
some people might have only one or two pair of shoes. So it all depends on the person.
Shelves on the side of each side of my house that I store things, but that's more for like luggage and blankets and other work things related things, towels and kitchen appliances. On my shelves, I do have room on those shelves that I could put shoes if I needed to, but I don't have to do that. I'm blessed
you realize you're blessed. So I imagine, because you don't have a mortgage payment to pay, taking for granted you don't have to pay rent. So your mental health in those departments are good. Do you think if more people would adopt the type of lifestyle that you, with housing that you live in right now, by, because some people have a problem. Like, you, I mean, you went from, like I said, it was a tool shed, okay? Some people, once they, I'm not living in no shed, but they have what I would call mental health issues or psychological issues behind that. But when you look at what you did to that shed, it's, you know, so it doesn't matter what you call it. It's a home. So do you think, I mean, if more people would take the route that you take, that they can, if they had any mental health issues concerning housing, that can be radically changed if they would at least see what you did with your home?
Absolutely. It's a issue, a matter of prioritizing your life, what's important. If you, for instance, if you like to travel, you need to save money in areas of housing, mortgage, and rent, and all that. So buying a shed or being in a shed or even container house, that might be less expensive, and your money could go toward traveling. So whatever you your extracurricular activities are, you can enjoy that if your housing costs are lower. These days, housing costs are crazy, extremely expensive. Somehow, you mean?
Right.
I mean, you, especially depending on where you live, you could be paying $1,500 for a studio.
That's true. That's true.
And they say Florida housing has really increased because we got so
got
many New Yorkers.
And your tiny house is in Orange County, Orlando, which is not cheap. Now, and you've also, when you converted that shed into a home, and like I say, people, if you go to our Facebook page, which is DIY Housing TV, scroll down the first, it's got 9 pictures here total. That's Viata's tiny house that she's currently living. That's just her second tiny house. All right. So the first one she was in was 160 square feet, which was big enough. I was in it twice, and I'm 6'8", so I stood, I didn't have to duck my head or anything like that inside of that. But now she's in one double, I mean, you know, 320 square feet. So, like, say, if you look at the pictures on our Facebook page, it's very comfortable.
And my feelings are high, which is what I love
about
feelings are very high. They're not, you know, claustrophobic. Like, some sheds you would feel claustrophobic in, but the ceilings in here are really high.
Right.
I'm telling you,
and,
this guy was planning on long-term use of this because he really did a quality job as far as the materials.
Okay. Now, speaking of container homes, now recently you took a trip out of the country to Central America, I think to Costa Rica. So share with us what you experienced down there as far as with container homes, because, or container housing, which many people around the globe are interested in that. What was your experience with that?
Well, my friend and her son who lives there, my friend lives here, and her son has been in Costa Rica for probably 10 years now. They bought some land in Costa Rica, and then he bought 2 shipping containers and put it on the land and created a really nice, comfortable house with those 2 shipping containers with a little, which he put 2 shipping containers on each end, the long one, and then put a space in the middle and a roof over both in the space to create a house with a big middle area for kitchen and living space. And so he has 2 bedrooms, 2 baths. The containers are the bedrooms, a bedroom and a bath in each container. And then in the middle, he put a floor and a roof over both. Beautiful, beautiful. And then the rest of the property, he sold lots on the property so that they have a healing center there. People bought lots with the mind to create a healing center. So now they're getting ready to have, this was 2 years, he's just about finished everything, and 2 years, it's been 2 years. So they're getting ready to have a retreat, their first major retreat with one of the lot owners. She's bringing her yoga students, and we got 8 people going down there. So, and it was an Airbnb for a while, but that didn't work out as well, so they're not going to do Airbnb. They're just going to try and do retreats, bring people from the United States to go down there and have a really nice getaway. Which is a really beautiful place to go to get away.
Okay.
It slows down. Puerto Rico slows down. It slows you down. You can't be driving 80 miles an hour on the road, and you can't, if you need to go somewhere, you got to take a little taxi, open taxi. So it's a whole different lifestyle.
Okay. All right. And shipping containers, I don't know how much she bought them for down that way, but and I don't know what the price has gone up in the last 2 years, but I know you were able to buy those, depending on the size of them, for $2,000 to $3,000.
Well, Anthony would be able to tell you that, because that's the guy who, he's been on here with Chris.
Right.
So he would be tell you how much, because that's what he's doing now, buying shipping containers and then renovating or creating houses from the containers, different styles, different sizes. And
okay.
He's like 10 minutes from me. So I'm excited to watch that process.
All right. Now, there's your renovation. Now, how much did you spend, if you don't mind sharing it, just ballpark figure, how much did you spend to basically renovate, to convert that shed into the, and you know what, for legal purposes, it's still a shed, because once you call it a tiny house, the word house is regulated. So what would you ballpark figure, if you don't mind sharing that figure, ballpark figure?
It was upwards of 20 grand, because the major expense was the plumbing. I had to put plumbing all the way to the front to the septic tank, because there was no plumbing in here. So that was the biggest expense, was paying a plumber to have people dig a path to the front of the house where the septic tank was and connect it here,
right,
and then all the plumbing.
So essentially you guys don't have any municipal services when it comes to, you got a well there too?
No, it's city.
Oh, you're right, city water, that's municipal water. But the house has a septic system.
Yeah.
No sewer system. Okay. All right. Because where I'm at, I got septic and I got a well. So I'm not connected to any municipal services at all. Okay. Now, if you also created generational wealth when you recycled that shed, because, you know, if you ever decide to move or whatever, your grandchildren could even move in there and then rent out the house. Now, let me ask you this question. How much do you think, if you decided to do an Airbnb out of that shed that you recycled, what do you think you can get per day, per night for that? Because it's in Orlando.
I would guess, I stayed at Airbnb in Orlando, and we paid, $140 a night. So, probably about $150 a night, I would think, because I have the place where I stayed Airbnb, there was no bathtub. There was just a shower. I have a huge bathtub, because that's just one of my pleasures, is having a big bathtub stretching my legs. So I have a huge bathtub. The space that I was in, they didn't have a lot of the amenities I have, about $150 a night.
Okay. And, people down there that way, when they go to Disney or Universal Studios and all that down there, so it's in an excellent area and whatnot. So,
this is safe neighborhood for sure. It's a family-oriented neighborhood. A lot of family and kids in this neighborhood, so no crime in this neighborhood.
Now, you've written a book about your first tiny house experience, but I'm just speaking out loud and thinking out loud right now, but I think what you did with that shed is worthy of a book itself. And I'm basing that on, I sent you a link this morning, a few links this morning, of a woman over in England. She lives over in the Cornwall part of England. And Katrina Davies. And she took her father's studio. He had a studio office, and which was, a shed. And
yeah,
she converted that into a shed.
Was, that's the one where it wasn't insulated, right?
I believe so.
I saw that. Yeah.
Right. And she wrote a book about it called Homesick, and her, subtitle or whatever. But that's what I'm saying. There's another book laying within you if you ever decide to write one.
Yeah, for sure. I wrote a book about, it's an e-book for anybody who's interested. It's an e-book, Downsizing into Joy from 30,000 Feet is the title. It's an e-book about my first experience from a 3,000-square-foot house to a 160-square-foot tiny house. And all the things I had to do to downsize, because it is a process.
Right.
If you've been in a big house, you got to let go. You got to let go of a lot of things.
Well, yeah, it's mostly psychological.
Yeah.
I mean, I figured it's mostly psychological. So now you can probably even teach a course on that, what you've done with that, with that shit. Now, some people down here in Florida and probably other parts of the world, they might call it a mother-in-law cottage, a grandpa or grandma cottage, or you can call it whatever you want. But like I said, it's nice. Well, now, let me ask you this. For a person that wants to do the same thing you did, what are some of the things that they should consider?
Reading, going online and reading about what it takes to become a minimalist, because you have to change your point of view on, what's important and living a minimalist lifestyle. And most people have so much stuff, they couldn't even begin to think about doing this unless they get rid of things. So I would say reading and studying what it takes to live a minimalist lifestyle, because like you said, it's a mindset, and you got to renew your thinking about how you're living. Do you need 10 pairs of shoes? One of the biggest things I had to let go of was my books. When I was living in a big house, I had a huge bookcase, and I had all these books, and I had to sit down practically a whole day and go through books that I said I really don't need, because I couldn't carry all those books into my tiny house. And I ended up putting some of the books in a house I invested in Orlando. It's a rental property. And then the second move, I had to decide once again, how many books do I need? So if you love to read, and it's so easy, L.A., I listened to an audio book the last 3 days over the weekend, because I had to do a show about trans. I've been doing blog shows about trans confusion and gender confusion, and I found the book The Return of the Gods by Jonathan Cahn, and it was a free audio for 30 days. If you go on Amazon, you can get the book on audio. I love audio books. So the solution, my point is, the solution to space about books, you stop buying books. Do not buy books anymore. You either get audios or you get Kindles.
Well, now, they're Kindles also. Yeah, because I do Kindles. I got over 200 books on my phone.
Audio, when you're considering this lifestyle, no more books, because books take up too much space. And if you love to hold books, well, just keep the ones you like, but for going forward, it's Kindles or audios for me. I don't buy any more books. People, if I see a book, oh, I love it. Does it come in audio or Kindle? That's my question. If not, I'm not buying another book because it takes up, they take too much space. So I have a very slim bookcase. I think I took a picture of it. It's on the Facebook page. And I said, this is it. I'm not going to be stacking books all over. And I love, and that's what I do for Blog Talk. I read everything. But, and here's the other thing. YouTube University, you don't have to buy a lot of books if you just spend time on YouTube. There are people lecturing on YouTube. They're sharing their wisdom, their knowledge, and their experience on YouTube. So even the book I download, audio, listen to this weekend, he has lots of YouTube videos on the subject. So there's no reason to buy a lot of books if you don't have the space. If you have space, yeah, go ahead, collect as many books as you want. And then at some point, all those books, you're just looking at them every day and you're not using them. So books are kind of becoming obsolete in the handheld form. It's just people.
Yeah, I agree.
How many times are you on a plane? I see people with their tablets reading. I don't see anybody read with a handheld book on a plane anymore. They're either reading it on their phone or their tablet. Even older people, I'm sitting on a plane, this woman, gray hair, she's got her tablet scanning her book. So we're in an age where
some books. There's some books people haven't converted over to the you know digital versions yet or e-books, but yeah, my first go-to is Kindle, something I can read on a phone or some type of computer device.
I'm trying to figure out my book's audio because that's really the way to go.
Yeah, audio's are good too.
Yeah.
We got a call here. 347 area code. Your mic is open.
Hello, everybody. Can you hear me, LA?
Yes, sir. We can hear
you.
Yeah, I
feel books is going to be a collector's item. And, you know, it's the same people doing a tablet. They're just touching, they're swiping. They're not using the full motion of their hand. And, you know, it's the same use it or lose it. And the good thing about a book, a lot of people don't know things by heart. You know, like back in the days, people used to, know how to, they knew numbers by heart, like telephone numbers. And, the tablets and everything like that, they're doing everything for us. But, I'm starting to, I'm kind of like old school. I believe in, some hard copies and stuff like that. Because if we have some type of power outage, for whatever reason, it is, EMP, I think it's an EMP, like somebody do, some type of, thing nowadays, you got all these people popping up and, they created, they could do these things and knock out whole electrical systems and wipe out a whole electrical system, then, we're in trouble. So I believe, the old way, because I'm going to give me a botanical encyclopedias. I remember I had that from the 70s. But I feel like don't give up on the books, because if we have a power outage and we need to rely on information from tablets and stuff like that, we're going to be in trouble, So I feel you need to keep them books. But the tablets is a good thing. And, put your stuff on flash drives in case, you have to pick up and run, have a gold tab, like what they call a gold flash drive. Have stuff like a gold thing in case you can't carry a tablet, in case you need to travel even more lightly, have a flash drive or something like that, or have a crank radio, something you could crank up that maybe not, it may not be solar power. Maybe you have to crank it up to get some power, Wind it.
Okay. So what's your name?
My name is Daryl. I'm from New York.
Daryl, you're absolutely right. Nobody is saying throw away your books if you have the room for them. We're only suggesting if you want to live a minimalist lifestyle in 160 square feet of space or 320, one of the things you need to consider is your book supply. If you've got 300 books and you're thinking about downsizing, you got to get rid of some of those books, because books are going to take up a lot of space and you can't use, you can't bring 300 books into 160 square feet of space. That's all we're saying. Yeah, hold on to your books. I love holding books and marking them, highlighting. That's one of the joys I've had. But I listen, I'm 68 years old. My son, who's in his early 40s, he doesn't buy books much either. He even uses his tablet at night to play audio books for his 6-year-old son. He turns the audio on, but he also, this is what he does. We go to the library. They go to the library and they get all the books that they like so they can hold the books and do some reading, because he wants, you know, they got to read. 6- and 8-year-olds need to be reading books, and they can't use the tablet all the time. So you've got to help prioritize your life in this area of books and reading and do what is convenient and easy and comfortable for you and not be stressed. We don't want to stress you out by saying get rid of all your books, but it's about, we're talking about being minimalist and reducing the space that you live in. Books got to have to go, and Kindle and audios are the way to do it if you decide to live that lifestyle.
Yes, I minimize a lot of things. You know, family first, a lot of jobs I've been on. You know, I have my child late. I'm 57. My child is 10. And the jobs don't care anything about him going to school. The jobs don't care about me being a single parent. And I'll be like, yo, y'all don't care about me. You talk about you need personnel power. I don't even like this. You know, I say nowadays it's not about, you know, back in the days they say manpower. It's personnel power. And they don't care anything about, I feel like this, let the child go to school, and then, you know, we can go to work. You got some countries like Ethiopia, 12 o'clock, everybody's home with their family. You know, I heard that. I don't know if it's true. But, hey, you know, the only way we can keep society running is, you know, we got to, like, you know, tend to our children. And if they won't let me, you know, these jobs won't let me tend to my children, I don't need to work for them. I don't need to work for any job that doesn't respect that. My child has to be, I have to get my child up in the morning, get him on the bus, and I have to be home for him to, like, you know, to receive him when he coming home from school. If they don't respect that, I'm not working for them. Like that, you know? So I like when it comes to minimum things. When it comes to minimizing, I'm minimizing a lot of things in my life. I hate to go to funerals, and you call people, they get up every day, go to work, and they do whatever they do. They'll pick up the phone for their wife or their boyfriend. It's a divorce or it's a separation. But everybody want to meet at a funeral, and I don't do that. I minimize a lot of things in my life now.
Why do you hate to go to funerals? Did you say you hate to go to funerals?
Yeah, I hate to go to funerals because this is how you predict the future. If they did it to you yesterday, they're probably going to do it to you tomorrow. They're probably going to do it to you next week. They're probably going to do it to you next month. And it's going to do it to you year. So this is how you look at their patterns. When they have a pattern, they have a track record of doing this continually. If they don't go to work, they're going to get fired. They don't pick up the phone for their husband or wife. It's going to be divorced, or it's going to be separated from their girlfriend or boyfriend. But then here they go. They expect you to come to a funeral. And I'm not doing it because I reach out. I reach out before a funeral happens. And when I see that they not pick up the phone, but they pick up the phone for their job, or I have to block my number, and that's how I make them pick up the phone. I have to block my number. So I'd be like, yo, I minimize a lot of things in my life.
Well, that's
the
great.
Way
I love going to funerals because I sit there. I read the obituary, and I figure out how they got in that casket when they did. And I love to see what type of life that person lived and learn lessons. You can learn a lot going to funerals. That's just me. I'm kind of weird. I don't mind going to funerals at all. But don't take on this victim mentality that they're going to do something to you. Reverse that and say you have the power to direct everything in your life, and nobody's going to do anything to you. You, like you just said, you're going to be only work for people who allow you to bring your son to that job. That's power. That's powerful. So keep that attitude. You're making the rules here. You have the labor. You're offering them a service, a labor, a skill, or whatever. You're powerful. You're powerful. Don't let them tell you. And the best thing would be to be an entrepreneur But if you can't do that, at least make them clear, make it clear what you will allow in your work for in your work effort.
Yeah, so if they won't let me, you know, drop myself to school and then come to work, I'm not working for them. Or if they don't let me
right.
get off in time to pick up my son, I'm not working for them.
Yeah, yeah. You make demands because you have the – if you have negotiable, marketable skills, you can make demands. So you do that. That's how you run. You have power in your life. Don't be a victim and talk about what they're going to do to you. No, you step forward, sovereignty, and tell them, I'm running my show. I have the skills. Here's what I'm offering you, and I have to have a drop off my son, blah, blah, blah. You make the rules, and the universe will – bless you in that power that you're exercising.
Yes, I will. And that's what I do.
So thank you for sharing.
Deanna, when you were living in the first tiny house, what was your utility bills like monthly on average?
$30, I think, if that much.
That's
I
for
had to
electric?
Pay my, yeah, I had to pay, yeah, for the electric and water. It was utilities. Yeah, water and electric. Cause he
so
had a
$30
well.
For both of them combined, about?
Yeah, about $30.
All right. So for people out, because there's some people out there that they had $300, that could be just the electric bill. For some people, or higher, that's another reason why you might want to, and I agree with you, people have to adopt a minimalist lifestyle mindset first. Because most people are addicted to what I call hyper-consumption.
Right.
So, psychologically, they feel they need to live in a 2,000, 3,000, or 4,000 square foot house, or they feel that they have to live in a large city. So now, when you with your first tiny house, you were in a rural area, but it wasn't that far from Orlando. I mean, how long did it take you to drive from where you were with that little, what I call a tiny house village on 11 acres? How long did it take you to drive from there into Orlando?
Well, about an hour away.
Okay. Now, in my opinion, an hour is a reasonable amount of time.
Yeah.
That's not bad. Some people, if it's 30 minutes, more than 30 minutes, they don't want to have anything to do with it.
I was close to some small cities that provided everything you needed. You know, Lowe's, Home Depot, Publix, grocery. I was less than 30 minutes from those places. So it wasn't like I was really out far away from major, you know, conveniences.
Right.
So I couldn't come.
Right, and that's another good thing you're right. You look at it.
Yeah, 20 minutes max. And people who
okay,
live in the
city. Okay, so 20 minutes from everything you needed. Okay.
I don't know, Chicago, New York, you're asking for trouble. You know, you sent me that video about teenagers rioting downtown Chicago. It's like they got a new mayor.
Right.
What's he doing? And what's the old mayor
Wait,
doing? I told them.
No, wait a minute. The new mayor hasn't even been sworn in yet, right?
Yeah, so there's something really strange going on in Chicago and New York. New York's got robot cops now and AI cops, and the people are leaving New York in droves coming to Florida. They've been for the last 2-3 years. I saw something like 30,000 or 40,000 people have left New York and come to Florida in the last 2 years.
Well, 250,000 have left Chicago in the last 20 years.
And it
all
seems
right,
to
but
be getting
they're well. All right, now, like I said, you've lived large. You lived in homes that had 4,000 square feet on practically an acre of land and a swimming pool.
Like, yeah, Yeah.
All right. So, y'all, you live in the big houses, put it that way. All right. You live in a house that has a swimming pool.
People who have lived in poverty most of their life, they're craving and desiring the big house, the swimming pool, the two. But that's expensive maintenance, I'm telling you. You might think you want the big house, and but you got to be making a lot of money to maintain that house. It's not like when, even when you buy it and you get your mortgage, and you're paying, let's say you're paying a $1,000 mortgage. It's going to cost you, in a year's time, it might cost you $10,000 to maintain that house, depending on how old the house is. Does it need a new roof? The plumbing breaks. Something always breaking in the house, and grass, you have grass. If you live in a
right.
community, if you live in a subdivision, you got to maintain your grass.
Yeah, if you live in a community with an HOA, right.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, there you go. $400 a month for the HOA. That we were that's where we were living when we first moved to Florida, is in a homeowner association. That got, it's getting letters because you painted your house the wrong color. And block, I mean, that was stressful for
now,
me.
Let's tie that into part of the title of today's podcast, mental health. How many mental health issues do you think arise out of, and a lot of people don't realize this, out of trying to maintain a home that they really shouldn't even be?
Yeah, things break down and you can't fix them. What do? They just have to stay broke unless you can learn. Well, the good thing is you can sometimes learn how to fix things yourself.
Right.
If you have a mind, like Daryl just said, you use your hands for not just turning the pages on books, but you use your hands to fix things if you are in a house. You got to learn to do that if you're going to save money. Otherwise, you're going to be paying a lot.
Can I say something?
Yes.
Yeah.
Like my son, he has type 1 diabetes, right? And I was like, I was so used to working since I was little. You know, like when I was 7 years old, changing tires, because my friend's father had he worked for a moving company. And so, you know, we was like 7 years old lifting radiators, you know, 1, 2, 3, ugh. 1, 2, 3, ooh, you know, to the next stairs. And that's how we lived, 7 years old. And so we was like, you know, like we was workers. And you said like the mental health, I don't even have a house, but I was going through things like, yo, I was so used to working, and then I'm out of work now, and I felt like I was feeling, you know, upset. That this wasn't, you know, people wasn't in my corner. And last night, my son went to sleep, and I, you know, I seen videos of people from other countries, like in India, how people have their legs over one of them. They all bunch up together. You know, this one has an arm over this one. That one has a leg over that one. And I don't know who these people are. I don't know if they family members or it's just like the whole community. You know, they touching one another. You know how they, like, everybody hold hands and they pray or whatever. But these people are sleeping, and they just have their body parts over one another in a whole big room. I seen this. This country was, like, I believe it was India. But my son last night, he grabbed me. He just kept on needing me. And I was, you know, I feel like I needed a lot of things. I feel like I needed family. But then what happened is so sad that family have to only meet up at funerals. So when it comes to mental health, sometimes we feel like we need, when it comes to the house, we need this house, we need to pay this bill, we need this and we need that. And I got to the point, I said, yo, let me minimize a lot of things, because the main thing is like a roof over my head and my child head, something for him to eat, you know, go to school, and his health. So that's the main thing, you know, four things, a roof, you know, something over his house. But if we don't have something over the house, you know, God gave this earth a house. So if we choose to live on the outside, like some people live on the outside, you know, in the bush, and we see the countries all around the world, the people live in the bush. They live in the jungle. They don't have anything. They might have a bamboo house or, you know, banana leaf house. You know, they make shelters. But we, you know, because, you know, I say we went from caves, we went from log cabins, we went from a house, apartment to command. You know, we upgraded from caves to log cabins. And, you know, it just, you know, the Joneses make us feel like we have to have. And the Joneses give us the mental things that L.A. said, you know. So I was so used to working since I was little. And then what happened, and how many people, me, I live out in Queens now. I used to be, I'm raised in Brooklyn, but out here, you got to travel. You know, as you said, you got to travel 30 minutes or hours, something like that. And because I had to travel, it felt like the pandemic before the pandemic even happened, because during the pandemic, nobody had anything. You know, things, the services were shut down, businesses were open. Out here in Queens, there's nothing around. It ain't like I'm in Brooklyn. I walk 10 feet, I got a store. You know, I got to walk blocks and blocks out here where I'm out in Queens, and just to get to a store or something like that. So when it comes time to, like, the mental thing, like, we feel like we got to have. You know, our grandmothers and our great-grandparents, they was workers. And we come up, get a job, get this and that, and this is the Joneses. And how many – and my child got sick in 2021. It was like I had to resign from my job. I worked for the parks department, you know, clean up the parks and stuff like that. And from there – and then now I'm out of work, and I'm helping people, you know, who working constantly. I know people who make $100,000. They ain't broke. They don't even have a house. They don't even have a car. They don't even have – their children are grown. They're giving all their money to the church. They're giving all their money to the witch doctors. You know, and it's so amazing that here I go. I don't even have a job. I'm living off my son's income because he has SSI. And that's how I'm making it right now. You know, I get my little public assistance food stamps and, you know, that $6,850 every 2 weeks. And it's so amazing how people have a lot of things. And how many of them going to save? Well, even if they save 20 years, they put investing in 401k, it might be a third of whatever they're making, that they used to making. How are they going to live off that? You make $100,000 a year. Now you're only making like $30,000 after retirement. You know, so with the mental health issues, it's really something like that, you know. And you, no matter how much you tell people or something like that, they want to keep up with the Joneses. Or you know, like what happened, and you know, it's that saying, pile on the rabbit, you know. And, you know, it's the saying, if you can't beat them, join them. But no, you know, in the same situation, you can't beat them. Yes, you do join them, but in certain situations, you don't join them. That, you know, see me, LA has my phone number. Let me see, this phone number right now, I think only my son has it and LA have it. But my old phone number, 300 people had it. I'm not doing it anymore. I'm not giving my number to 300, 400 people anymore. I'm not doing it anymore. Because what happened, I'm there for them, and they're never there for me. And, you know, I'm not bad. I'm not upset about it. But it's just that, like, the point that I'm saying, like, my son, you know, sometimes you want things with the job, you want this car, you want this and that, and I don't want too much. A lot of people, some people they want everything, and some people don't want much. And I'm a type of person, I don't want much. And then what happened is that, and my son, he doesn't want much. Sometimes I'd be like, oh, you too grown to be hugging on me. And he doesn't want much. Just give it to him. He's 10 years old, give it to him. And then no matter what age he at, I'm going to give it to him. I'm going to give him that attention. Because what happened, if he don't get that attention, he's going to be upset. And, you know, and he really means a lot to me. So the people who mean a lot to you, give them what they want, you know?
Okay.
Well, it sounds like you are a great dad, because being a great dad is just giving them attention. And how, can I ask you a question? Is his mother in his life?
Nope. No, okay. He has, you know, everybody has a past. When I met her, she had 5 children, but everybody has a past, right? So I can't hold that against her. A lot of people say, oh, don't go into that situation. But what happened, everybody not the same. Just because somebody had a bad experience don't mean I'm going to have a bad experience. But what happened is, I'm a man, you know, I like the way She looks. I like the way she sounds. I like the way she walks. I don't know what, when I go to a woman, these are the things I like. It might be the way she looks. It might be the way she sounds. Maybe the way she touched me. So what happened? But everything that is good is not always good, you know. So what happened is that I have to be very be careful who I let into my life now. You know, women are beautiful, you know.
So, Daryl,
you know, you can. Yes.
Daryl, your responsibility is to be a good father, and it sounds like you are a great father. You give attention and you hug and all that. Hugging boys is important as a man. Let's not forget it's important as a father-son hug. Yeah, lots of hugs. And then all you have to do, Daryl, is bring healthy, conscious women into his life that can fill in that female love energy in a healthy way, and he'll be fine. He'll be fine. Pick your friends carefully.
I thought about maybe teachers. I thought about maybe doctors.
Yep.
I thought about,
yep.
you
yep.
know, law enforcement. You know, this is the person I thought about. Maybe I should get involved with a law enforcement. Maybe I should get involved with a doctor. Maybe I should get involved with a teacher. And, you know, and maybe I should get involved with, you know, these are the women who I think I should get involved with, maybe because. But a lot of them too, they have problems too.
Well, I don't know why you're describing their career versus their health stat, their mind and heart. Don't get involved with a broken doctor or the lawyer or any of that. Get involved with healthy, conscious women. Not forget about what they do for a life. Are they healthy, conscious people? You don't want dysfunctional people in your son's life. Just get. Choose them not by their career, but their attitude and their heart and their consciousness. That's what's going to keep your son healthy.
Where can I find somebody like that at?
You have
God,
to go 8
million
places,
people on the planet.
Libraries, you know, just keep your eyes open, mind, or go to the library, go to museums, you know, just go to places where your son can learn things plays, any place where people are educated, you know, you're not going to the bars, of course, but go where you find educated people, museums and schools and universities, and go to university campuses and visit places that are free where people are, you know, interested in socializing, any place where you can socialize with people.
Okay.
Or do volunteer work.
I would love to work for the Red Cross.
Well, there you have it.
So there you go. You're going to find some healthy, conscious, heartfelt people there. Hopefully healthy. That's the key. Healthy minded people. You don't have to, you know, be in perfect health, but, you know, places like, do you have a YMCA that you can join or something like that?
It's close by me. It's a YMCA close by me. I live at like Waycrest Beach 25th, one stop from Mott over here in Far Rockaway. And the YMCA is maybe about 2 to 3 stops away from me on the train.
It's where your son needs to be hanging out. It's the YMCA people who are mindful about keeping their bodies fit and, you know, hanging out with conversations and things like that. The YMCA, I love the YMCA. My grandkids love the YMCA. They get swimming lessons.
Let me tell you a funny thing. I used to box, right? And a lot of times when I used to prepare myself for, I was amateur. See, one thing before, the difference between pro and amateur, the amateur, you have to be ready because you can meet the best on any given day in a tournament. And when it's professional, you know who you're going to fight. The amateur, this guy could be the best and he could beat the champion. He could beat this guy. He could beat Mike Tyson. He can beat Muhammad Ali, but they never pick him because they wanted to pick Muhammad Ali. So no matter whatever he do, they're always going to get Muhammad Ali. They're going to get Mike Tyson the tournament. I mean, they're going to give him the win. So what happens? So you have boxers out there who could be champions. So when I used to be an amateur, I used to train in private because I didn't want anybody to copy my style. I didn't want anybody to copy my style, because a lot of people, they could copy your style, and they think they can use that against you. So a lot of times, going to the gym and stuff like that, people, I like to really keep very private now. I'm at the point now I keep very private. I only go out the house if it's necessary. I don't let, you know, I'm aware of my surroundings. I try to be aware of my surroundings. I try to make my son aware of his surroundings. And when he's out in the street, don't be playing into the phone. You got to cross the street. How are you going to cross the street? You're watching the phone. So I try to make him aware of his surroundings. And at the same time, I have to be aware of my surroundings, because I look at patterns. Like this lady got her package stolen the other day. The next thing, the water come dropping down from the ceiling. You know, so I look at the pattern, because the ceiling, everything was all right till her package got missing. Now all of a sudden the ceiling is leaking water. So, I mean, you know, I put two and two together, and this is the only reason I can think about it. You know, like she's trying to do things to make the tenants get mad at the landlord, you know?
That's strange.
I know one thing, Daryl, I can recommend. And I'm going to use some stats I've put out here before, particularly on where to meet people. You've got 336 million people in the United States, give or take, you know, births and deaths. But 336 million people in the United States, 86% of that live on only 3% of the available landmass. Now, New York City, I'm not talking about New York Metro. New York City has over 8 million people. So New York City, about, let's see, about 3, maybe almost 4% of the total population of the United States of America lives in New York City, in those five boroughs. That's a lot of people in one spot. And in my opinion, humans aren't designed to live on top of each other. Like say, it's less than 3% of the land mass when it comes to New York State. What I would recommend is the volunteer work is one way, you know, everything that you or Viata suggested. I would go to rural New York State, which is, I mean, there's a lot of rural areas in New York State. That's where I would. You'll meet a whole different crop of people in those places. That's what I would. And I might take, I would say 90 minutes, 90 to 120, an hour and a half to 2 hour drive outside of New York City. It's a whole different world.
It is, because I used to go to
Including the pricing of housing dramatically dropping. Now, the further you go, I mean, up into New York State, depends on, because I used to drive from D.C. I used to do day trips. I used to drive from D.C. to Buffalo. That was like a 7 to 8 hour drive, which is the same amount, because if you go from New York City to Buffalo, that's about a 7 hour drive. But, you know, at that time, you know, you can buy a house, a big house in Buffalo for $700. So less people. And the price of a housing drop. Now, from New York City, like say, give yourself a 90-minute radius, 90 to 120-mile radius. But a lot of people, now here's my thoughts on this. A lot of people, the reason why 86% of the population lives on only 3% of the available land mass, because the United States is a rural country. I might sound kind of crazy from a person that might live in Chicago and has really never ventured outside the suburbs of Chicago. But the United States, 97% of it, it's essentially rural. But a lot of people are addicted to hyper-consumption and convenience. So a lot of people, they don't, you know, in New York City, you don't need a car, to be honest about it. You know, they got plenty of good municipal transportation or available to, you know, so you don't need to own a car to live in New York or Chicago or probably not even Los Angeles. And then a lot of your services are based in that city. So a lot of people like now it's going to cost you more for all that comfort and convenience. But a lot of people are addicted to that. They're addicted to spending. Whereas if you look at the Amish, the Mennonite, and the Hutterites, they basically, if you look at where they live in rural communities, you know, where you don't have, you know, all the comfort and conveniences of a New York City or Miami, Florida, or Orlando, Florida. So it a lot of people, in my opinion, they are addicted. You can't pull them out because they're just like somebody's addicted to crack cocaine or heroin. They're addicted to the comfort and conveniences of Boston. You can't move them out. And their mental health could miraculously clear up within a 30 to 120 minute drive, or 1 hour, 30 minute to no, maybe no more than 2 hour drive away from the city. Their mental health issues, their relationship issues, could all their personal finance issues could all clear up if they would just move to another location, 30 minutes to no more than 2 hours away. But a lot of people, you know, how can you tell a crack addict don't use that stuff no more? Logically, they're not, you know, they might agree with you, but they're addicted to it, so they're not going to get away from it. So you have a lot of people that have no substance abuse problems, but they're addicted to the comfort and conveniences of that a large city supposedly offers. Matter of fact, I would even say, now this is just LA's personal, I'm going to say observation and opinion, that the majority of black Americans that live in the United States do not need to live in the top 100 most populated cities in the United States because it's too expensive for most of you. And number two, based on the high-profile homicides over the last 5, 10, or even 50 years, you need to move to, for instance, George Floyd. Everybody's heard of Minneapolis, Minnesota. But name me a town in Minnesota that's got a population of 5,000 less people. Name those towns. Bangor, Maine. Nome, Alaska. Whittier, Alaska. Move to the black towns I've been to, Taft, Oklahoma, Summit, Oklahoma, Tallahassee, Oklahoma, Highland Beach, Oklahoma, Eatonville, Florida, which is 45 minutes from where I'm at right now, and Viada is, matter of fact, probably a matter of minutes away from Eatonville. A historically black township has never had any racial riots there at all, but how many black folks have heard of Eatonville? And Eatonville, I don't even think they have 3,000 people that live there. So I just think a smaller place where there's less people, your mental health, your physical safety, your political freedom, all dramatically rises when you go small. Actually, when you go small, you actually live larger. But that's just...
So you say out of sight, so you're saying out of sight, out of mind.
Well, it's like Viada mentioned a few minutes ago that although when she was living in her first tiny house, which was about an hour away from Orlando, but there were other satellite communities that were 15 to 20 minutes away where she needed to go to Home Depot, Lowe's, wanted to go bowling, wanted to go to movies, wanted to go shopping, wanted to go to the health food store and all that. Those communities were there. And the cost of living was dramatically, I mean, you heard what you heard. She lived in a debt-free house for 5 years, her first tiny house, and her ground rent was, I mean, it ended up being $200 a month. When she moved in there, it was $250 a month. So the average person who lives in Orlando ain't paying $250 to live in Orlando. I can tell you that right now. But are they willing to move an hour, 60 miles or so, outside of Orlando to do that? Because once again, as she's pointed out, there was there are always satellite communities ever all over the place. 48% of the United States lives in communities that have a population of 5,000 people or less. When you live in a large municipality, you're paying for municipal services, which means you're paying for the unionized police department, the unionized fire department, hospitals. All that stuff is expensive. However, if you live further out, 30 minutes, 60 minutes, 2 hours away, take your pick. There's satellite communities that can fit your budget. Then you're not going to have any arguments over how we're going to pay the light bill this month, or somebody's not going to beat their spouse up or hit them in the face or whatever because they can't pay the mortgage this month. See, a lot of, in my opinion, and I haven't been in any domestic situations like that, but I believe a lot of domestic violence problems stem from mental health issues, because somebody is living geographically in the wrong space and in a house that is too big for their budget.
Another thing, especially for people like parents like Daryl with children 10 years old, your children need to travel and see the world. If nothing else, they need to go to the next state and see what's going on in the state next to yours. That's one of the best reasons to downsize and pay less for housing and all those other maintenance expenses and put in your money into traveling. And when your children can explore other neighborhoods, other cities, other countries, they're going to grow, mature mentally, because they're not in this little box that they think this is the world. This is how the world is. People are angry all the time. People are stressed. Whatever is going on in the neighborhood, children need to travel. So I think that's one of the top reasons to downsize and pay less for housing and spend money on traveling, especially when you have small children.
Yes, I want him to learn. I wanted him to learn a different language every year, but I haven't got to that point yet.
Get him in front of you.
You can easily do that in New York City.
It's free. You got all these free options on YouTube to take advantage of YouTube.
And
in New York City, maybe not every language, but in New York City, there's a lot of languages people, the United Nations is in New York City. But if you went to a rural county that isn't too far, well, it's about 3 or 4 hours away. Bradford County, Bradford, New York. But like I say, New York State is mostly rural. Take away New York City, that's 5 boroughs. You got Albany, the state capital. You got Buffalo, Niagara Falls, and Rochester. Those are 3 inexpensive cities to live in. But the rest of the state is basically rural. So whatever you're paying for a room in New York City, you can have a whole house, probably on an acre of land or so, somewhere in one of the rural counties of New York State.
Yeah, I paid $1,300 for my place. Yeah. But the funny thing
about
it,
$1,300 for what? For what now? Is it a room or a house or apartment?
It's a room. It's not even an apartment. I gotta walk out to the kitchen. I gotta walk out to my bathroom. My landlord, she doesn't screen her tenants. Well, as I said before, the lady, when she gets mad, somebody steal her package for Amazon, she all of a sudden the ceiling start leaking water, you know. So what happened? I stopped calling the landlord because you have some people, they have this political view, you know, in some country, everybody's
it's an extension of law enforcement. It's an extension of this and that. So I don't call the landlord and shit like this, because then if I call the landlord, it'd be like, okay, they know I'm here. So I just say that if the landlord don't come around and check, hey, that's that, that. She doesn't care about the place. But she'll come around on the first. So
okay, you know, here's what I'm going to recommend, Daryl, because I'm familiar with it a little bit. Bradford, New York, which is in Steuben County, New York, with S-T-E-U-B-E-N. Bradford, New York, matter of fact, while we got you on the phone right now, and people can follow along while I do this, we can all do it together. Put in any search engine, cheap land in Bradford, New York, or cheap land in Steuben County, New York.
Okay, I'm
okay, good. Property, let's see, what comes up here?
That's S-T-U-B.
S-T-E-U-B-A-N, I think,
okay.
Or Bradford, New York.
Okay, I'll put Bradford in.
It'll be better, though, if you gotten, all right, I'm looking here. In Steuben County, New York, particularly in Wayne, New York, which is in Steuben County, you can buy.
I see Steuben County.
All right, there's 6 acres available for $64,000.
The population is 811.
Right, it's got. That was a, you know what? Where you'll find the pay dirt in New York State, look for towns in New York State, they have a population of 1,000 people or less. Look for land, raw land or farmland or agriculturally zoned land. Stay away from anything that's zoned residential. But Steuben County, New York, like you say, you already got the population. That's where the pay dirt is in New York State. So I'm saying, I'll let you say this. What you're paying for rent on a monthly basis, within a matter of months, you can go take a look, take part of that money and put it on a down payment and get you land in New York State and get it by the acre.
Okay, that's a football field.
Yeah, acres the size of a football field. And that's basically that's what I go by, like it, and also those are also the places where you can legally put up these tiny houses, these small houses, because the smaller the population, the more freedom you. I put it like Steuben County, New York, or Bradford, New York. I would consider those places the real United States of America, where you have less government regulation. See, the more people there are, the more density there is. You got more rules, you got more regulations, you got less freedom. And then the economic law, supply and demand kicks in. So, you know, New York City's got over 8 million people that live, you know, that live there. God knows how many people work there. You got over 18 million that live in the metro area. So that means everything goes up. I mean, from a cup of coffee to a hot dog to a room that you might live in. So it, you know, $1,300. And you've heard me say this on here. What? Put this out. I'm on. There was a guy, Derek D. Dickerson, has a Facebook page, Tiny Yellow House. He bought 5 acres of land. He and his brother bought 5 acres of land in California for $3,000. And then about a month ago, we're going to have her back on here, hopefully by the end of this month, Angela Griffin. She lives in Orlando, but she owns property in 7 states. She bought something in Illinois. She bought like 11 acres or 13 acres for, I think 11 acres for like under $400. So There are probably opportunities like that in New York State. That's why we're going to bring her back on here, because she finds bargains like that. So, matter of fact, I'll give her a call today or tomorrow to get her back on here before the end of the month. But in any event, but you got to be willing. Now, you can work it a couple of ways. You can, you and your son, you can take him on a road trip and discover these places and still live in New York State, but at a dramatically lower price. Or if you get a few of them going, then you can have some of them that pay for you to live in New York, live in New York City.
Say that again. Say that last part.
Or, like I say, you can also accumulate properties in a lower income area, and then use your passive income from that to pay for you to live in New York City.
Yeah, as I say, play out something, live outside or do outside and come in. I forgot, we talked about this about last year or 2 years ago.
Right. But, and the thing is, once, now here's something in, also in Steuben County. Now, if I was up in that neck of the woods, I would jump on this. Steuben County, which is spelled S-T-E-U-B-E-N, Steuben County, New York. This is in Bath, now Bath, New York. And Darryl, real quick, look up the population of Bath, New York for me. Look up the population of Bath, New York, B-A-T-H, Bath, New York. I just ran across.
I know they have a Bath out there.
I just ran across. I'm looking at right now in Bath, New York, 5.2 acres. All they're asking is $39,995. You can afford that right now.
Say that again? Bath, New York?
You can afford that, 5 acres.
Okay, I see Bath, New York.
Have you found out what the population of Bath, New York is?
Okay, the population of Bath, New York is 11,426. In 2020, 11,000. That's way more than Steuben.
That's what I call the real population. You're not going to get, like I said, we haven't heard, there's no George Floyd. You don't hear no stories about George Floyd, Trayvon Martin, Eric Gardner. We don't go down and list these high-profile homicides of black men. You're not going to hear about that in Steuben County, New York. Or Bath, New York, or Bradford County, New York. You're not going to hear those stories because they don't happen in those places. Now, there might be an outlier every now and then. But for the most part, in those areas, you can go to those areas and be left alone. And more than anything, regardless of race, color, creed, or religion, you can prosper in those places. The rural areas of the United States, I've said it, God knows, I don't know how many, is where it's at. So that's two cities you can go to, Darryl, and in the same county. And it, you know what? You can probably find something closer to you. I just named Steuben County because at one time I owned some land in that county. But I'm in Florida now, so I have a tendency to try to get stuff close. I mean, the furthest land away from me now is in Texas. But I went to college in Texas for 4 years, and I happen to know that part of Texas. That explains Texas and Oklahoma, although I'm in Florida most of the time. Anyway, so but a lot of your, theoretically, a lot of mental health issues can be cleared up by geography. Simply move 30 minutes away. Now, you might find an opportunity like Viata. Viata looked at a shed, but saw it as more than a shed. Because imagine the people that lived in the house before Viata and her family moved into that, you know, that plot of land, that they didn't even fix it up. To them, It was just a tool shed. The other saw a home. Anyway, let me get off my soapbox. 619-768-2945 if anybody's got any questions for Viada. She is Viada. Now, I've mentioned this to you before. Oh, matter of fact, Daryl, you still there?
Yes, I'm still here.
Daryl, look up the town Painted Post, New York. Painted, P-A-I-N-T-E-D, Painted Post, New York. Give me the population on that. I just ran across, and this has been on the market for the last 8 months. In Painted Post, New York, which is in Steuben County, New York, I'm looking at 5.53 acres selling price, asking price. Now, that's the asking price, but I wouldn't quibble over this one, $25,000.
Okay, the population.
What's the population in Painted Post, New York?
Okay, the population is 1,809, and that was in 2010. That was the census.
Okay.
Right? It's a Painted
right.
Post. It's a village in Stuyvesant County, New York. The village is in the town of Irwin, west of the city of Corning. Population was 1,809.
All right, I'm looking at a piece of land here, 5 acres, a little bit over 5 acres, for $25,000, and that's in Painted Post, New York, which is in Steuben County, which is a rural
I'm
county.
I'm screenshotting that.
Okay.
I'm going to screenshot
all right.
it.
And then,
in 2021, it was 1,750. Okay, so the population has grown since 2010. So it hasn't grown.
It's shrunk.
A matter of fact, it's shrunk because in 2010 it was 1,809. And then now in 2021, yes.
Now, all right, listen to this. The drive time between Steuben County, New York, and New York City is 4 hours and 30 minutes. It's 273.5 miles. Now, for somebody like me, I don't think that's far to go. All right. And there are people that are super commuters, that their commutes are 2, 3, 4 hours a day, Monday through Friday. There are thousands that do that now. But
what's the
it's just a 4.5 hour drive. So for me, I don't think that's far, but that's me.
But L.A., what is the purpose of commuting? I'm not trying to commute.
I'm looking at now. Once again, different people have different lifestyles. You know, like I say, if you're telecommuting, if you can earn your money with a smartphone or a computer and an internet connection, you know, you can have a job that's physically in New York City, but you live 4 hours. Or you can even live in China, around the world. I give an example. I covered this on a podcast before or earlier this year. It's a term, you guys can look it up on YouTube or on the internet. It's called, it involves telecommuting.
What is it?
Let me break down how it works. The term's right on the tip of my tongue. Anyway, there's this one guy, and there's several people like this, but this one story I covered earlier this year, he has 11 jobs. He has 11 full-time jobs, and all of them have a physical location. The headquarters for all those jobs come from companies that are located in 11 different locations. He earns over $1.2 million a year. Now, how can a person manage 11 full-time jobs? He does it by telecommuting, and each one of his jobs, he has a separate laptop for each job, and he earns over $1.2 million. He's able to do that And the other people like that, where because they don't have to get out in rush hour twice a day. So that's how that person I got to look through my old archives here because there's a term for that. It's when you hold multiple full-time jobs and you telecommute to take care of those things. But,
you know, the funny thing about it.
But so for me, I don't know about anybody else, for me, it'll be worth it for me to live 4 hours away if I have a telecommuting job that's located in New York or anywhere around the world. Because now the way things are, you can live in the United States and have a job, you know, if you can go through the language barrier, that's in Tokyo. Or the smartphone, the tablet, the laptop, the desktop computer, along with an internet connection, is the new, really is almost the new 9-to-5.
You know, the thing about it, I used to work in the garbage business, right? I used to work for Waste Management. Mm-hmm. I used to work for Eastern New York, High Tech Trans. And the funny thing about it, the garbage, so, you know, private sanitation at the project. You know how a project is. The project could be 16 stories, 16 floors.
Right.
And out there in Brownsville, Brooklyn, New York, and sometimes the people who they hire, you know, I think they're scared in the neighborhoods, you know. So what happened is that I look at it like this, or maybe sometimes they get injuries on the job. Maybe it's wintertime, they slip off the stairs, they injure themselves, you know, coming down. They don't, you know, they don't dismount properly. So I feel like this, they need to get like maybe some bobcats or something, or some front end loaders and scoop up the garbage and maybe put it in like 10 yarders, 20 yarders, because they have a problem with the housing authority in New York about garbage pickup. And then they have the thing with the rodent thing. They have this rat saw now in New York. And I thought about like, I should get me an air pellet gun and, you know, go out there and shoot the rats, right? They say, like, yo, how much damage can one rat do? How much damage can one rat do? Because I'm at the point now, I'm 57. I'm not trying to carry BXs. I'm not trying to lift sheetrock anymore. I'm not trying to slam a sledgehammer anymore or use a jackhammer. So I'm at the thing now, I have to use my mind or don't use my muscles that much. So, like, if I, like, so, like, okay, I know how to operate heavy equipment. I know how to operate an excavator, a bulldozer, a front end loader. You know, I used to operate the same ones that was at World Trade. I used to operate the 345 BL Caterpillar. I used to operate three of them. I mean, two of them. They came from the World Trade Center during 9/11. And then I used to operate the 600 Komatsu PC, the 300 Komatsu PC. Them are excavators too. And they had a front end loader that came from the World Trade Center too. So, I know how to operate the equipment, you know, minor service them, you know, minor maintenance and stuff like that. Know how to, you know, do a little bit of welding and stuff like that. But the thing about it is that, like, when it comes to, like, the guardsmen throwing the bags into the, you know, the packer, the 35-yarder, I mean, the 35-yarder packer, whatever, I think that they should, like, scoop up the garbage and then put it, like, in a container, like, you know, a 20-yarder, 30-yarder, 40-yarder, and that would be, you know, take the injuries out, you know, the bag busting and stuff like that. So I'm looking because they have a problem with garbage in New York. So I, you know, I'm thinking about that. Maybe I should get one garbage truck and get somebody reliable to work with me or just hire, just, you know, say, look, I need, like, you know, 10 trucks or 30 trucks. And look, I can solve your garbage problem with the project. You know, give me
there are plenty of opportunities in New York because where their problems is, that's the key to making money. Viata, now for people who want to learn how to do what you've done with tiny houses or shared conversions into homes, is there any possible way that people, are you in the future, offering, well, you already wrote a book on this stuff, a part of this, a workshop, a retreat, consultations, what?
Go to my Facebook page for that type of announcement, update, or if you're interested in counseling on how to get started, go to one of my Facebook pages, Soul Purpose Healing, and send me a friend request.
Oh, I know who you are, Soul Purpose. I know who you are. I haven't spoken to you in a while. How you been?
I'm good, Daryl. How are you? How you doing?
I'm all right. You remember me?
Yeah, of course I remember you. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, so Soul Purpose Healing, send me a friend request or my personal page via the Vietta or Vietta, V-I-Y-A-H-T-A, Robin.
Yeah, Vietta, yes. That's how, yeah, well, that, I remember
and
that.
If you send me a friend request, then I'll answer. Or you can go to my website, yourholisticlifecoach.com.
Well, listen, you still have your podcast that comes on? You still have your shows that come on?
Twice a week. I have Blog Talk Radio Friday morning, Health and Wellbeing with Vietta. And
yes,
Sunday night.
I remember you sent me pictures of your son and your grandchild. Yes, I remember all that.
Yeah, I'm glad you remember us or remember me.
Yes, I still have some pictures. I like that. I just got to look into my phone. That was like about like, wow. That was like, I've been here like since 2018. So that's been like a few years ago.
Yeah, time is flying, isn't it?
Yes.
Yep. So yeah, Friday mornings on Female Solution, Blog Talk Radio, and I post that on my Facebook page as well.
You have Amadeus on your show too, right? Amadeus, right?
I did. Oh, that was a while ago too, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's been on. So I'm live on Facebook. One of those days I'm usually live on Facebook, Blog Talk Radio Friday morning and Blog Talk Radio Sunday night, Soul Purpose Healing.
I'm going to do Friday.
Okay.
Okay, Vietta, well, now it's Monday, so you got anything planned for, you know, your Friday agenda yet and how people can tune into that?
Well, Friday, just go to my Facebook page Friday morning. I'm always there doing joint rolling every Friday morning on Health and Wellbeing with Vietta on Facebook Live. And then I usually try and read the news items on YouTube or on my internet. I get like several emails from conscious doctors and people, Mercola.com, Children's Defense, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. And I take the most important news items, and that's how I do my Friday morning health and well-being shows. I take whatever. Like last week, the FDA announced that they're going to be threatening people who don't take the next jab and telling me, if you don't want us to save your life, then you're going to die, basically. So that was my show Friday on why you don't need to be listening to stuff like that and what the solution is when the FDA is threatening people about the next jab, which is going to continue. Our government just, is budgeting something like $10 billion, some amount of $1 billion for the next group of vaccines. I can't believe they're still doing it. They're so arrogant about this when people are dying and getting sick, and they still insist in that there's a new jab for you. So I talk about that type of stuff every week to help people wake up and choose better.
Okay. Now, Vietta, real quick. Oh, got my dog whining about. She's trying to get some food. Sitting disease, real quick, because a lot of people who don't want to get away from the city have sitting disease. Could you break that down for us?
What did you say again?
Sitting disease. Exactly what is it? Because a lot of people who live on the grid, which is the big city. You can't pull them out of the city because they have sitting disease. So could you explain what sitting disease is?
City disease?
Yeah. Sitting, S-I-T-T-I-N-G.
S-I-T-T-I-N-G?
Yeah. You sent me a video on it a week ago.
Oh, well, that was about when you sit too much in your chair. That's what causes issues with back and problems in your body. That's what that was. People should get up from their chair every. If you're sitting for more than an hour, you need to get up and every hour at least and walk around for 5 minutes, and do some stretching every hour. If you have to sit for a while, at least every hour, maybe more, half hour. Get up, stretch, move around, high jumps. I mean, not high jumps. High, lift your legs up. But that's what's going to improve your back and your muscles in your body.
Okay, well,
and
all right, so you gave people information.
If you can get a standing desk, my son uses one not just at home but at his work. He has a standing desk because he came to realize how damaging sitting was.
Yeah, it can be. All right, well, for people that are interested in learning more about how to organize your own tiny house from a shed or whatever, you can visit the other social media information or sites, rather, and contact her that way. And she's on Sunday as well as Friday. You have those phone numbers, Viata, for Sunday and Friday?
Friday is 515-605-9325. But if you go to my Facebook page, I have a flyer every week with that information. So even if you don't remember the number, just go to my Facebook page and I post a flyer for each show. Sunday is a different number, 215-383-5863. So I always put a flyer on my Facebook page to let everybody know how to go on the internet or to call in or Facebook Live.
Okay. Well, I appreciate you coming on last minute or last second today. Hopefully you guys got something out of it. Contact her directly if you want to learn how to memorialize your life or live in a tiny house and convert a shed into a tiny house. And she's written a book. But Dave, that's just me thinking out loud. On that note, everyone have a good rest of the day.